Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Salutations, everybody. It is Maddie here today with episode 110 of the Ham Radio Podcast.
And it is me, the Lone Vault Wanderer.
And it's me, Carrick, with ACG. And I'm going to challenge that it's episode 110. So I want a fan to count up the episode.
Honestly,
we were literally just talking about that. Yeah, what?
I'm not even joking, Carrick. I'm right now going through the playlist on Maddie's channel just to double check.
Dude,
yes, all the numbers
are
correct.
Mine are
it's
so messed
now
up.
You don't have free time and you're counting up our fucking podcasts. I guarantee the number's right, dude. I guarantee it.
It is right now. It is right now. You're fucking lucky, man.
I did.
You're lucky.
I fucked it up twice. Actually, probably more than that. I fucked up twice in memory that I can recall. Like once in the 90s and once right just before where like someone was like, yo, it's not 107, it's like 109 now. And I'm like, oh shit, this is our own show and we don't fucking know.
100's so a big number, you know?
Yeah.
Counting gets tough.
Well, yeah, like, you know, counting numbers is pretty hard.
yeah, math.
Yeah, but for those keeping track, if you want to listen on the go, we have all our mobile links in the description down below. If you want to join the conversation, consider supporting the Patreon. And now, let's roll into our first bit of news this week. Let's talk some Far Cry 5. You know, there was a teaser earlier this week. Then we got the announcement trailer. There's been a bit of course, controversy with it. The release date is right now February 28th. What are our thoughts on this?
Carrick, you can start. I'm assuming you're a bigger fan of Far Cry than I am.
Well, so we had talked about this, I think, on the podcast. I know maybe Maddie and I did just separately on Twitter. So I had been leaked that it was going to be a Longmire style thing, and that is what it looks like. Same person who had told me about Primal. So that was exciting that it sort of panned out, because to be honest, I've been always waiting for this person to be wrong. So I was more into that. I was more like, is this going to prove him wrong? Because originally some of the first pictures, I was like, eh. But here's the thing. It's so funny because this morning I started talking to people about it. And matter of fact, my Discord, somebody just said, when they announced it, I knew it was being made. When they showed the trailers today, I became interested. And I think that that's really cool, especially because a lot of us are talking about Montana being it's in, you know, it'll be in America. It'll be a slightly different location. But there's also the fact that some people were pissed off about some of the caricatures, especially the pastor in one of the trailers. They were like, oh, this is over the top. And I always want to remind people that Far Cry is known for that. Far Cry has a game you can beat in 30 minutes if you just sit at the dinner table. It's got Blood Dragon. It's got Voss, who is a comic book character, technically. So I'm excited for this because, to me, they're my Call of Duty, in a way, where I return to them every time they release. I know they have weaknesses, and I'm still actually excited for something in Far Cry since the very first one. So for me, I'm just like, okay, great. I'm finally actually knowing what's happening, and I'm pretty interested so far.
Yeah, for me, it was what caught my attention was you didn't see a I mean, we saw with the typical announcement of the picture, you know, the cover art, like, oh, this is going to be the main villain. But in the trailer, it didn't really depict that. It wasn't like, you know, here's our big Voss villain, because that's kind of
since then
has become the trope for Far Cry. I've noticed that they really focused on the theme with the game. They focused on what the world's going to be like, what the atmosphere is going to be like. That caught my interest more, where when it was teased, I was like, I don't really care. As simple as that. I like Far Cry, but it was like, okay, whatever. And like Carrick said, I saw the trailer. I was like, now I'm interested. Yeah. And the only thing that really dampened that was when I saw the release date. And I was like, fuck, February? Like, I thought this would be a fall title. It's like, what is Ubisoft doing in fall? Because I heard that Assassin's Creed got pushed out of 2017, apparently. So it's like, what are they doing this fall? I mean, they just did Watch Dogs, so maybe it's a new IP. I'm very confused what they're going for this fall.
But can I just say, though, like, if you look at the trailers, it looks like such a pretty game. Like, yes. That a kind of game where you just, you know what, I want to explore.
Far Cry's always had that, though. Like, I know Far Cry 4 is a game, it's kind of polarizing. A lot of people really like it, a lot of people really don't. But I thought that game was gorgeous. I mean, oh my god, some of the vistas and stuff, amazing.
Like you saw in the trailer, some of the swamps, like, yeah, I could just imagine myself just enjoying exploring this for several hours. But I'm really intrigued by the setting and the characters. I'm not the biggest Far Cry fan, mind you, but this just looks like a fun game with an interesting premise. I know some people were a bit upset about the cast of characters and what it represented, but it looks like a fun game to me, to be honest.
Yeah,
and I think they've announced it pretty well.
Yeah, see, my thing is that, and we won't get into, because we don't do that on the podcast. That's kind of our thing. We don't get into politics and hijack our following to push an agenda, but what I want to personally talk about is more so just the idea of pushing boundaries and why people sometimes try to suppress that in games. I mean, Far Cry 5, I think it's awesome Ubisoft's like, yo, let's push the boundaries. I thought it was awesome, even though Mafia 3 wasn't that great of a game, I thought it was awesome that also tried to push some boundaries in storytelling in games, because what it does is helps the medium get recognized as a form of powerful storytelling. You know, I don't think movies would have gotten to where they were if they didn't keep pushing the boundaries and you started seeing really serious topics being covered in movies. So it's like, what do you guys think about the controversy in general, without obviously us trying to get too political here?
Look, I guess the thing that I will say is that I think Maddie's absolutely right. The telling of controversial topics and story and narrative in games, I think, is an absolute must if we want our industry and our medium to be taken seriously and not just be seen as, you know, for kids. Then we need to tell complex stories in games, and one of those being, because it's something that's always told in movies, is racism. And mind you, though, we don't even know necessarily that this cast of characters is racist or anything. It was more people viewed the poster and kind of got that sense. But, you know, judging from the trailer, they just seem like a bunch of religious nuts, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, no signs of racism. But the point that I'm trying to say is that games in the past have dealt with those controversial topics before, like racism, and they've done it well. Like, I know this game, I always mentioned it before, but Bioshock Infinite was an intensely racist game.
Yeah, and I was just thinking that.
You know what I mean? But anyways, I'm not saying that this game looks to be telling those story plots, but I think if games can do that, usually games will try and tie the story together well in the end. Like, there will always be a point to it. So even if it tells those controversial topics, in the end, it'll try and, you know, have a good story or a good ending, a good feel to it. So, yeah, it looks cool, to be honest. I understand the controversy and what it's about, but
yeah.
I'm just like, you know what? It looks like a fun game.
What do you think about it, Kirk?
I in all honesty, I think it's so... I just don't get that excited or mad or happy about games this far out. So to me, when people said it, I was like, okay, whatever. It's Far Cry. They've got Voss. They've got Primal. They've got all these games doing all these different weird things. They got Blood Dragon. And now they've got a game based in Montana, and we're many months out. So great, whatever. I just don't get that. I just don't get that caught up anymore in those kind of things.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah.
And it's because if we guess on this, for example, Mafia, I personally felt that the pastor in the Far Cry was trying to mimic in some ways the Mafia 3 cutscenes at the starting. Mm. In fact, I felt like there was some definite cribbing going on, which is fine. Like, that's how they work. But when it comes to narrative in games, like, should we tell racist stories? Should we tell whatever? I think I disagree with Lone in one. I disagree and agree. I disagree in the fact that I think fuck anyone. Who believes that we aren't already an important industry. I don't think we need to prove anything.
Absolutely.
And I know you weren't actually saying we do need to prove something.
Yeah.
I think fuck anyone who believes that. What happens is, and I'm just being honest, it's the fans who have the problem, not the game makers. It's the fans who freak out about shit and become so enraged or go and do this on a comment and that on a comment. And I know people are going to be mad at me and be like, you're blaming the fans for... I'm not saying devs are not a problem. They have their own issues. This is separate. I'm saying that many people I talk to are barely connected to this industry, and they don't bitch about the devs. They bitch about the fans. they bitch about those those overreactions, which is why Maddie says we don't jump into politics here, because if we do, it inevitably steers to a group that gets so passionately pissed off about something so small that you lose the entire discussion. And I think that's sadder than anything. Like, it's embarrassing sometimes. Well, we've talked about it where you're like, oh my God, did you see that comment? You're like, fuck, this is embarrassing. Like, I'm embarrassed for the person leaving this comment. Not embarrassed for a bad game or a dev who makes a shitty game, whatever. I think it'd be cool to see if it is racism. I think it'd be cool to see if it's religious zealots. I think it'd be cool if it's both, since in history, almost every religion has some kind of, you know, bump up against racism anyway. So that'll be great to sort of mix those. But I have a question to bounce back to you guys. So Ubisoft had said, we're going for a less linear, more open narrative. And I feel that that's why we saw the way the trailers were. We didn't see a lot of the main character. We know he's customizable, he or she. And so my personal belief is that I might be wrong on what... So Far Cry's have always been open, especially Primal. It was like, just enjoy and you went out. I have this feeling that there's going to be some stuff in this game that is a little different, and it might be more of a GTA where random smaller things can be done, like side... side activities. I'm just guessing here, but some of the stuff that they've talked about in the past, open narrative, they were very clear that their games, that's what they're going for. And if you look at Wildlands and you look at Far Cry 5, there's some argument to be made that might be where they're going. And that, I don't know, is that more interesting to you guys or is it less? To me, it's less. I like linear. I like story chapters with side stuff.
What do they mean by, if you don't mind explaining, what do they mean they're going for with open narrative?
Sure. So what they basically described is cutscenes won't be as prominent or happen at all.
Logs, phone calls.
And it won't be as condensed. You won't have like chapter. And then side stuff to do when you want. In fact, Lone's discussed holding off main missions and doing side missions and holding off side, you know.
Yeah.
They've talked about just more of an open narrative so that you experience it. And I'll be honest, it feels more like Skyrim in its description than, say, Witcher. Witcher, you're this one character. We're all this one character. It's how you play that character. Skyrim, it's this one game, and it's how you play the game. And I'm not 100% sure I want every Ubisoft game to be Wildlands.
No,
that's my worry.
No,
sorry, because I was not a big lover of Wildlands in the end. So anyway, I just wanted to know what you guys think. I mean, like, Maddie, do you like that idea? Or I mean,
I'm with you. You know, I like my storytelling. Some people say usually when you don't like that linear, direct storytelling, you could be an idiot, because I view it like with Dark Souls, where a lot of storytelling is through the item descriptions and shit. And when I kind of slammed that, was like, I think it's more so them. It's a unique way of telling a story, but I don't think they're actually telling a story, so to say, such as a direct cutscene, chapter. Like, you're actually looking for the story. So for me, I find myself that I don't mind that type of open narrative where, you know, they'll give you a phone call, they'll give you the updates and all that stuff. But I find myself much more disengaged with the narrative immediately, because you're not directly interacting with the character. It's just an audio log, and audio logs are useful world filling tools, I think, where if I want to learn about an area I'm in, you pick up an audio log or whatever it is that gives you that audio, and you hear about what happened here, or something along those lines, or a character who lived there. That stuff's fine, but when it's for the main narrative, I don't mind it all the time, because I think it could also be really useful. I think Bioshock 1 used it to perfection, where it became a powerful narrative tool when the game wrapped up. So, but I don't see that happening with Far Cry 5. I don't think you can really predict that, though. But in answer to your question, not really. Because not that I'm going to go in and say already I'm not going to like this story, but if they're going to take that route, I already can see myself being much more engaged with the stuff you do in the open world, the outposts. I hope there's not that many radio towers, that type of stuff, than this story.
Yeah, right.
Especially if they got this main villain faction thing of religious zealots or whatever. I mean, that sounds interesting, especially the trailer. Like I said, it got my attention. So for me, it's like, why not actually take this chance to hone in on something pretty unique that you don't see in games all too often, as far as I'm concerned, at least.
Yeah.
I'm going to lean towards the, it's too early, and until I play it and experience, you know, what they actually mean by open narrative storytelling, I don't know. It's really hard to say. I will say, though, I understand what Maddie is saying in that, you know, when you play a game and it's an interesting story, you want to experience that story. And I don't know, it's tough because, for instance, if we refer to Prey, that game used so many different elements of storytelling, but it still kept the main story at the forefront. And I still think you can have, because, you know, with Prey, you had people calling you in, you had things on terminals that you could read, you had magazines you could read. So it used all those different layers of storytelling, but it still kept the main story at the forefront. I think it's honestly, it's really hard to say. I don't know.
I mean, it makes sense.
I guess it's really how the developer uses the tool.
And that's the thing is they're talented at telling that kind of story. And I'm not 100% sure. I believe that. So we'll see. Yeah. I hope to be wrong. And, you know, like, I'm always looking for that good game. So that's regardless of it could be fucking a crossword puzzle. If it's fun, it's fun. Like, that's what matters.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I guess you're worried just, you know, about the main story more taking a backseat to the actual open world itself.
And the fact that, not to be rude, but we always joke about towers and stuff. And if you remove some of those kind of more directed, some of that more story, you go towards what I don't think is necessarily that developer strength, which
you know, it's interesting though.
Towers version 2.
Well, if you take Breath of the Wild, for instance, I think that's essentially what Ubisoft is talking about when they're talking about open narrative storytelling. I mean, that game, the story very much takes a backseat. But I think it's okay in the case of Zelda, because let's be honest, the story is the same as it's been for the past 20 years. Yeah. And it's like, as much as I love Zelda, and that game is definitely my game of the year so far, the story's not that interesting. It's really not. And that the story takes more of a backseat to just exploring. But when you have a story so far anyways that seems interesting in Far Cry 5, is that what you really want? Do you want the story to take such a back seat like it did with Breath of the Wild, where you're more interested in just exploring and climbing towers and finding shrines? Or do you want it to be at the forefront? I'd prefer that, to be honest. If we're going to use Breath of the Wild as a comparison, I wouldn't want that if the story was very interesting. If the story's not compelling, then I don't care.
And it's going to be really interesting because the trailers were about Montana and all these cool people. And then if there's less story, you're like, well, then why was the trailer not just showing the open world and the sandbox gameplay? Like, that's why I'm questioning if this game will be like that, because certainly those trailers don't indicate that. But I could be wrong. What were we going to say? Yeah, sorry, Maddie.
It seems like almost a misidentification of his own franchise. Like,
exactly.
You look at the games like 3 and 4, which really brought the series to that mainstream level, and it was always about trying, at least when it was being marketed, it was about that main villain and just how evil it could be, and like, oh wow, I want to get to know more of him and see the fucked up stuff he does. And then to go and look at, I know Carrick and I have our differences on Primal, but Primal was definitely, I think, more gameplay focused. And from the sounds of it, 5 will be like that. It seems like the wrong thing to do with the franchise, in my opinion, because, you know, but then again, I don't remember much from 2 aside from the gameplay. I guess it's what do you think the gamer recalls in those previous titles? For example, in Zelda, because Lone brought it up, you know, when I think of the game, I don't recall shit about the narrative. I think of these awesome moments like riding around a sand steel, taking out the legs of a divine beast, and thinking of how just epic and dynamic that entire, I guess you could call it a boss fight, is. Or throwing bombs from the back of a Zora, you know, that type of stuff. I don't think of the narrative. So it's like, do people, for example, when they think of Far Cry, do they think of, like, the mission in Far Cry 3 where you fucking burn all the marijuana plants and your guy's stoned as shit with a flamethrower, and they're like, you know, let's go for those type of crazy gameplay missions. Is that what the player recalls? Or, you know, are they going for more of a narrative run? And it's like, not a bad idea, because I have to say, and I don't mean to ramble here, but I think to myself with Far Cry, we always think of the villain, but even with Voss, which I think was their best chance to do it the best, they kind of missed the mark on that. And so it's like, are they trying to re-identify the series and make it more gameplay focused, because they never really had that like home run villain outside of a couple of commercials?
So but here's what I want. Oh, go ahead. Yep, go.
No, I was going to say quickly, this was a Ubisoft-wide kind of intention. They said that all of our games, including Assassin's Creed, are going to adopt this kind of open-world narrative storytelling. And I'm trying to pin down why exactly that would be. Like, why are they going towards that? Maybe it lends better to replayability. I think that's the key here. When you have a very linear story, tends to be hard to play that game again. Once you finish the story and it's done and dusted, not many people can go back unless you really love the fucking game. But when the game is like a Breath of the Wild or like Far Cry 5 seems to be, you can go back more easily and play that game again because the story isn't so up in your face, so it's not like, oh, I've already experienced this before.
You know what I believe it's going to be? And this is, I believe that their decision was driven a little bit by like the Vivendi situation and stuff, and that it's one way to keep a game and microtransactions alive if you have an open world GTA Online style. But here's the thing. If they showed, let's say they were like, Far Cry 5, here's some gameplay, and they showed nothing but, and I talked about this earlier, so if somebody has heard me talk about this, I apologize, but if they showed nothing but a shield and a gun, and you have a morality meter, and you have the ability to non-lethally take down people who are transporting drugs, you have, and your meter went more towards the shield versus the, you know, the Raylan Givens type of shoot first, ask questions later, and you had choices for non-lethal takedowns, because we know the dog is involved. There's a dog that you can have non-lethally take down enemies in Far Cry 5 and a couple other things. If those things were available, then open world makes a little bit more sense. Not open world, open narrative. I would like that. Like, maybe that's just the side. Those guys are just sort of who does everything bad, and you're sort of trying to take them down, but it's not necessarily about taking down the specific person. Because in real life, if you talk to anybody who works at the DEA and stuff like that, many times they'll tell you, there's so many people you're taking down, so many different groups, it's more about the activities, and you're removing those, and you're getting people in jail, whatever, until you get like one person. If they want to do something like that, I'd be interested. I would love non-lethal takedowns in a Far Cry with like pepper spray bullets and fucking, you know, release your dog on somebody and those kind of things, you know, an open, sort of an open sheriff kind of game. It'd be interesting. But it might be skewed more towards Wildlands, which if that's true, then I'm not a fan because I didn't think Wildlands did a lot of its stuff very well.
Fair enough.
A lot of different stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it personally. Obviously, it's going to be a while before we hear more. I think the announcement was a little premature. But then again, I think it's a little weird to announce something coming out like February in the fall when there's so many games coming out. So maybe their hands were tied a little bit. But I felt that was the only personal blemish in that whole.
Can I say, though, like 2018, how many games are going to be coming out then? That's going to be such a bumper year for video games. I mean, we got Red Dead, we have Assassin's Creed, you have Far Cry. Obviously, Call of Duty comes out every year. What other big games are coming out next year? There's a lot of them. This is going to be insane.
Probably a new Star Wars game. That's almost a guarantee. I'd imagine if it's not 2017, then 2018 definitely would be a BGS game.
Also, 2K says they have one of their highly anticipated franchises coming out fiscal 2019, so probably it's sometime in 2018 late. And I'm assuming it's Borderlands, so it's just going to be a huge year.
Yeah. As if this year wasn't big, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shit. Any final thoughts on Far Cry 5?
Not from me. This looks cool.
All right, so we talked about Red Dead 2 just a second ago, and it got delayed to spring 2018, and then there were some reports about how that's not going to come out until after March. So what do we think about this? Number one, are we surprised? Did anyone get absolutely caught off guard and fall out of their chair?
Good old Rockstar.
For a Rockstar delay. Because I didn't.
When it happened, I'm just like, I'm just trying to remember how many different times GTA was delayed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, fuck, that, especially that PC version, took ages to come out. You remember that?
Yeah, dude. I mean, Rockstar is interesting because they make great games and they know it. So they almost have a undercover, we do what the fuck we want mentality without actually showing it, where, for example, they'll announce a release date, it won't come out on that release date, and they'll be like, all right, we're delaying it. Because they know people are going to buy it anyway. It doesn't matter. There's not going to be any dip in sales for them. Like I said, right. There is data that says that GTA 5 is the number 7 top-selling game this year. 3 years after the latest version of GTA 5 came out. That's, like, unheard of. So for them, I don't blame them for being like, let's just give them a fucking date. Let's excite them. If we gotta delay it, we delay it. Let's go for that date. And it didn't happen, and they're like, fuck it. Let's delay it, because people are still buying GTA 5. Their hands aren't tied on money. Hell no. So, like...
Shark cards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, shark cards. Jesus.
Dude. Yeah, I wasn't surprised. I mean, what are they... The thing is, in fact, I had an argument with some people on my podcast about if it was going to be delayed a couple weeks ago, and I was like, no, it for sure will. Like, and people were all, no, it looks like it's on time. Nope, it'll be delayed. Like, there's absolutely no question that it'll be delayed. I think the same thing Maddie does. I personally, and after talking to some people, I personally do believe they know internally that it will be, even if they announce a time, and that they are incredibly loosey-goosey with their dates, because like you said, they just don't necessarily, they have quality. If it wasn't quality, it'd be different, but they have games that are considered quality, and so they know it. They're just like, meh, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they it know seems if they like make a good game, it's going to sell, for especially for
Netflix. Yeah, that's all you need to do, Maddie. Is just make good games.
Just make,
and
just make a fucking good... I did it again. Jesus Christ. just make a good Rockstar. You'll be fine. The shit will sell.
I said it. Why can't it be done? I don't understand.
Man, I'm just thinking about that artist who drew the thing of us sitting around the board table. Yeah. What do we do, Maddie? Tell us. Well, you just make a good game. That's fucking perfect. Hire him. No, I don't think this is a surprise to anyone. Again, look at how many times GTA 5 was delayed. It's very clear that, you know, Take-Two is, like, if you watch their recent fiscal earnings, they're making just so much money with GTA, it's not even funny. I mean, Maddie mentioned how it could be one of the top-selling games this year. Every week, there's a top 10 charts released on MCV Pacific, which, you know, shows the top 10 selling games in Australia and New Zealand. And every time I check on it, usually Grand Theft Auto is on that top 10 list, even today, right? And especially because of the fact that they haven't even mentioned single-player DLC for that game. They're like, you know what, we're just going to keep doing online expansions. They're making so much money. So I don't think Take-Two as a company, obviously, they're not worried, or even Rockstar, not worried about, oh, we've got to get our next game out, because they're getting this kind of continuous cash flow with GTA 5. It's pretty much like Xbox with Xbox Live. They're just getting this constant flow of money in, so they don't care. And I think, I don't know if they're going to try and replicate the GTA model with Red Dead.
I hope not.
But I think their thinking is, well, look at GTA, right? It doesn't necessarily matter that came out in the month it did. Back in the day with games, you know, the month that the game came out was do or die with the game. Now they're like, well, GTA came... I don't even know what month GTA came out in, to be honest. But they're like, the thing is still fucking making money, you know, two, three, however many years later. And if we can do the same with Red Dead, who cares if it comes out in March of 2018 or May of 2018? Because 2 years later, we'll keep releasing online expansions, and look what it's doing. You know, no one's going to remember what month it came out in. So... yeah, not surprised, and I think they're now very, very bullish because of GTA and how well that's doing.
Even previous games, man. The only thing that upsets me, I said this in my video, is that, dude, that means we're not seeing Bully 2 for a while. Just the more they delay that, the more previous games get pushed out. That's why I thought, or why I wish
we're not
they
seeing
had a little
Midnight
more,
Club.
Yeah, that too. I wish they had a little more, like, all right, like, let's get the game out, but, I mean... they're in that position where they can, A, make lots of money, and, B, make a fucking generational title. It's like, you can't rush that. So it's like, you want to bitch, but you can't bitch. You really can't.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? I hope that this success with GTA, with Rockstar, actually makes them go, you know what? We're still making so much money with that game. We actually have the capacity to take risks with other titles. Even though Bully wouldn't be a risk, maybe Midnight Club will be a little bit more of a risk because it's less known. But they could start working on those games while they're still making fucking so much money with GTA.
Yeah, I mean,
and if those games flop, then who cares?
Nowhere. And that game was one of my favorite Rockstar games. I mean, I'm so in the... I'll say this right off the bat. I am so in the minority on my favorite Rockstar games. My favorite two Rockstar games are Bully and Max Payne 3. Everyone else is GTA 4, Red Dead Redemption, GTA 5, and I get why. I'd never argue it, but for me, it's those two games. I love both of them so much. And it's like, yeah, they can... I mean, they did... What did they do? Manhunt?
Yeah.
They were working on that one rumored game for a while, Agent. I don't know what happened with that. But
it was Last Guardian. It sort of gone away. I don't think that'll ever get released.
It just seems that Rockstar and Take-Two have this interesting relationship. When Rockstar's like, we can't get a game out, we need to work on it. Usually the case, if it was published to a developer, they will try, you know, not force them, but get them to release at a certain date, certain timeline, because otherwise things, you know, the other games will be delayed and it'll mess up their timelines, etc. Mm-hmm. But when it's Rockstar, Rock's like, yeah, we can't make this date. And then Take-Two or whatever, it's like, all right, cool, that's fine. We'll release it when you can. I feel that's how the meetings are going.
Well, I got to say, I definitely appreciate them not abusing Rockstar. That's definitely a weapon they could completely use against them and just say, yo, keep fucking churning them out. People love GTA. Just keep making that shit, you know? Doesn't take too... Same with Bioshock. They have a lot of titles underneath their thumb that they could just keep churning out and make lots of money on. And so I got to give them kudos for not abusing that. I'm sure it's a temptation that's hard to resist.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's a long way off. So that's one less game we got to play this fall. That's how I view it. I'm enjoying the little reprieve right now from all these games coming out. June's pretty barren, and that's just excellent news. There's Tekken 7 and the Crash remakes for anyone who cares. That's it. It's so beautiful. So beautiful.
So we have fucking time off to catch up on our lists.
That's what I'm saying. That's literally what I'm doing right now. Like, my friend let me Tales of Zestiria, which is, it's such a middle of the line JRPG.
Oh yeah, it
so is. Middle of the line,
man.
And I've just been playing it through for, like, why the fuck not? But he lent it to me in January, and I'm just now finally sitting down to play.
Mm-hmm.
I got like 12, 13 hours in it. I don't know how, but it's so like we talked about this, Carrick. It's like one of those games that I'm just playing because I've been spoiled so much. I need to play like a mediocre, middle-of-the-line game to, you know, just remind myself of how spoiled I've been this year and in general.
Yeah.
What have you guys been playing?
Go ahead.
What have I been playing? So, finished Prey, obviously. I'm playing Wolfenstein The New Order, and I want to finish that before E3, so I'm prepped for Bethesda's inevitable reveal of Wolfenstein.
Mm-hmm.
I finished Outlast 2, which, fuck, have you guys finished Outlast 2? Have you played it?
I don't think I'm going to play that one.
I've played it, but
oh, man, it's a fucked up game. Like, the talk about controversial storytelling, I mean, this kind of game deals with, like, child killing and rape, like, very, very deep topics, but wow. It's an Outlast game, you know. But the story in that game, while I have a few issues with it, it was very interesting how it ended. And I don't know if it's a game that I'd recommend to everyone because it deals with such dark subject matter. But the thing that I liked about this Outlast is that it wasn't as jump scary as the previous Outlast.
Really?
It more focused on the story, and it had this cool concept where, as you play the main story, you'd have like flashbacks to your past life and a past issue that happened when you were a kid, and how that contrasts with the current narrative. It was messed up, but I think it did a relatively good job telling that story. And in the end, it was one of those stories where I was like, "What the fuck just happened? I need to read up on this." And when a game makes
me
do
the
that,
first one, then the first one did that to me. I was like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah. You need to play it, honestly. Like, if you like the original Outlast, play it. If people don't like jump scary games or very dark horror games that deal with very messed up themes, then I don't know if you'd like Outlast. It's Outlast 2. It's not a game for everyone. I will say that.
It's just that I remember watching some of Angry Joe's review and the constant like running away shit. Like that's what pushed me away. Where I was like, I don't know if I want to play that. You know, if it's got some unique kind of hide and seek elements as you creep around the level, I like that stuff. But from the looks of it, it was usually like get to a narrative point and bolt the other way as you get chased down. You die multiple times until you get that perfect run.
It depends, like, because I played this.
I'm just going off
normal
his opinion and what he showed in the video, but mind you.
I played on normal difficulty, so I could very well imagine if you're playing on a harder difficulty, you'd get caught out much easier. But okay. I actually really like the way that this game executed the whole run and hide mechanic. Because, for instance, sometimes there's an area, like to progress, you need to go through this particular path. And then an enemy will spawn there, like one of the main mini-bosses or whatever, and you think, how the fuck am I meant to get past? So the aim of the game then is to actually hide, do a loop around, and then go back through that path. Mm. I thought that was fun. It was challenging. And even though you die a couple of times, I think that's the exact point with it. I never felt like the whole run and hide became a bit of a chore, unless when it was, I was, you know, very interested with the story and I wanted to progress and I thought, oh, I got to hide in this barrel again. But I think it reached that balance pretty good. It wasn't a grind for me.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's a game that's definitely... I wouldn't even put it on, like, my backlog list. It's like rainy day if I fucking see it on sale and I happen to feel like playing a game that...
You'll finish it in a solid session or two. It's not that long anyways. Yeah, it's like 9 hours, 8 hours long.
Oh, wow. Anything sounds incredibly short. Like, even with my friend, I was like, how long is Tales of Zestiria? He's like, you're just doing the main stuff? I'm like, yeah. 35, 40 hours, I'm like, that's short. Ever since beating Persona 5, anything beneath that game, I'm just like, I can handle that. That's fine. It's so incredible how much that game's changed my perspective on game length. It's fucking ridiculous. Spending 140 hours in one playthrough, and anything after that's so short.
You need to have a good balance of games. Some that are short, some that are long. Because usually after you play a long game, you think, all right, I just want a fucking 5-hour game. Just... so I can finish something.
Yeah, no, that's what I say to people, because I remember I tweeted out one time, like a year or so ago, I was just like, do you guys like those games that are like endless adventures that never stop, or do you like a game that you actually beat? And a lot of people were like, I just like the endless adventure, and I was more on the side of, I like to beat the game, you know, not where the credits roll and that's it, but I'm saying like that satisfaction of, hey, you beat it, and then there's more to do afterwards, or something along those lines. I've always found that spectrum pretty interesting.
Yeah, but that's what I've been playing, so you guys can ramble now. Cataract.
Sorry? So I have been playing... Okay, hang on. I'm going through an NDA real quick.
Don't break NDA, Cataract.
Yeah,
come on now.
Okay, so Star Trek Bridge Crew? Bridge? Yeah. The PSVR /5/ Rift game. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And... I'll just say that if you're interested in VR, you should definitely check out that review. That's Monday. Can't say much more than that. There is, let's see, I finished up Long Journey Home, which is sort of a Dark Souls space exploration game with a pretty cool art look to it, stylistic art look. And that review comes Monday. And so I can't talk about that. Rhyme. I can talk about that. So I beat Rhyme. And that's, you know, it certainly does have a look of... a little bit of the Zelda Wind Waker, a little bit of Journey. It's even got some nods towards Journey. So that was mightily impressive. And I think one of the major reasons, and I had forgotten to mention this during my review, that Lindsay Sterling, the dancer / violinist chick, had done the composing. It destroys Nier Automata and Persona's soundtracks.
Oh,
yeah.
Impossible.
It's the best soundtrack I think I've ever heard. It's the first time where I called up people and told them to come over to my house so I could let them listen to the music as I played. And
fuck.
I think I described it as Stradivarius pouring out One for the Homies of all the other soundtracks. Great. It's that good. And now, of course, if you don't like, you know, emotive whatever, then you may not like this soundtrack, but you know, it's a violin heavy, piano solo heavy soundtrack that it never once made me go, it's time for some Paxil, which a lot of those will drift into depression. This is about loneliness and solitary. And there's a point right at the starting, probably only 5 minutes in, because the game doesn't tell you anything. You literally start drowning on the side of a beach and then just play. There's no prompts. This music started playing and it was, I mean, I was by myself and I was like, what the fuck? Like, what is going on? Like, this is the best music I've ever heard. And it just continued. And then I just stood there for like 25 minutes, just going like, holy shit, this can't be Like, this has to be just one track that's this good, and it's not. So that game was phenomenal purely for soundtrack. Gameplay was great. There were some issues with platforming. I was really stoked to be able to play that because it's a reminder of how many freakishly amazing games in different genres there are right now. It's insane because I'll talk to somebody about 6 to 8 hours, depending on if you do every puzzle. And it's $29 on everything but the Switch. Whenever the Switch version, if it ever does come out, gets released, it'll be another $10 more. Not quite sure why. So, yeah, that game was one of those times where I just sat back and was like, wow. And then last night, I stayed up all night playing Injustice again. That's like the fourth sleepless night, I think, from Injustice. Not in a row. I'd be dead. I cannot stop playing it. I cannot stop playing it. I've never once leveled up a character with money. It's just been grinding. And what I consider grinding is playing. And I've just absolutely enjoyed going down the line in alphabetical order and leveling up to level 20. It, like, you know, 4 hours with this guy, 4 hours with this guy, 4 hours with this guy, 4 hours. And that's fucking so good for a fighting game. Not smooth. It's Mortal Kombat. They can't be smooth. It's not possible. But but it's good. And and I think that's pretty much it.
I'm definitely intrigued by Rhyme now. What's the game I'm thinking of? And it might be Rhyme. It was like supposed to be an exclusive Xbox One. It was Rhyme, and then like
Rhyme had some exclusivity complaints at the starting where it switched. Yeah, people bitch.
I remember like this one scene from a trailer where it was like this little guy running, and they like zoomed it out, and he was running into like some cavern or something. It had to have been Rhyme. Just that name rings a bell. I'm definitely curious on that one now, though. Shit. At least it's short, based off what you told me.
Yeah, not long at all. Six to 7 hours. Puzzle work would be considered easy to mediocre. In my review, one of the things I said is don't overthink, because basically I went in there and tried to build a fission reactor, and all I really needed to do was start a fire. Like, there was one puzzle where I'm all, okay, I need to grab this and put it on this and move this over here. And I found out it was like, grab this rock and walk it 10 feet over there. So you can overthink to the point of being, it's like, I was sitting there for 2 hours going, what the fuck am I? Like, I don't get it, but I was still involved. And then all of a sudden I was like, no, it can't just be that. And it was exactly that. Okay. And that was awesome to like sort of reset myself and go, it's not about fooling the player. It doesn't play tricks on you. It doesn't like, oh, we're so smart. It's about exploration of the islands. And that's why I liked it.
Okay. Curious. Very curious. Now, we're talking a little bit about backlogs here. And now it's time to talk about the Game Pass, which will eat up all the free time you ladies and gentlemen have out there who are listening. So it's officially coming June 1st. If you're an Xbox Live Gold member, it's already rolled out. It's $10 a month, features over 100 games. And you can buy the ones you want for a discounted price. And also, Carrick, you said that PC or Play Anywhere titles work on PC entirely.
Yeah. Yes. So you'll get the PC and Xbox version of whatever one you download.
Insane, man. That's some crazy fucking value.
And also, as well, your save progress continue. Even if your subscription lapses, your achievements, your save files, etc., you'll still have them. So should you choose to stop Game Pass, but you know you want to buy some of the other games that you've played through that, you can do that and pick up right where you left off. It's so great value, to be honest.
It is. It's insane, and it's something that, you know, we've talked about in past podcasts. Is that it's my firm belief that this is where that Microsoft is going for a backwards compatibility app style console with some unique value adds, because right now they don't have first party, and so it's like Scorpio will be the third party console. They've got backwards compatibility, and they've got Game Pass. Sony's got the more powerful consoles right now and better first party. And I think that makes sense. I think this is a perfect – it makes complete sense when you step back and look at what Microsoft's been doing. This makes perfect sense. I mean, and we already had one of our absolute Xbox haters today on the podcast announce that he bought it got announced, and he bought it right away. He's like, I would have 100 games for $9, so I bought it. He's like, I bought the Xbox, and I've already started downloading stuff. That's great. Awesome.
You know what's great as well is, you know, I think, what was it, $9 a month in the US for this thing? Now, usually when something comes to Australia or to a different country, it's more expensive, but it's $10 Australian. Like, really, really great value, even international countries. I think it's a great idea. It adds more value to the Xbox One. And do you know what I'm really liking about this? Because I don't know if I want to conclusively say that we'll never see a new console from Xbox, as in from the Xbox 360 to the Xbox One. But it seems like we're leaning towards that. I think we're just going to be getting, every 2 or 3 years, we'll get a better Xbox One. And because why else would this be changing now? You have this Xbox One that's getting new titles. You have a bunch of Xbox 360 backwards compatible that are still being added to, like, every week, it seems. And now you've got Game Pass that has over 100 titles. We don't need new consoles anymore. Like, we don't need a PS5. We don't need an Xbox 2. This is, like, the ideal world for gamers. Really, it is. I mean, there's no need to
and then focus on the games.
Exactly right. And then every couple of years, when you think that your current console is getting sluggish, like with the PC, it's the exact same in the PC, you have to upgrade parts, then you get a new console. I think this is great. And then it's not like you're getting a new console and then every single game in the past libraries are restricted to you. Like, you can't buy any of those older titles. Now they're accessible to you at an awesome value and awesome price. I think it's an amazing idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely looking into buying the Game Pass, but it's also that I don't struggle to find things to play, so to say. Yeah. So it's like, for me, it's just, I don't know how much it would work out, but I mean, I've looked into it just to support Microsoft. I mean, that's a fucking awesome offer, in my opinion. What I'm most excited about, though, sorry, my voice is raspy right now, is the potential of this getting Sony to revamp their PS Now thing entirely.
Yeah.
Price point, streaming bullshit, all that stuff. I mean, the fact that I'd have to pay like fucking $10 to rent a game for an hour or something along those lines, I mean, that's just ludicrous. And so that's what I'm most looking forward to with this whole Game Pass thing, is the competition it's going to bring. And I wonder how GameStop's going to adapt to it.
They're going to focus on merchandise and accessories.
Yeah, it's like that's
what they're going
to
do.
Another shot to them, right?
I
was just saying, apparently they had a decline. So it's like, what can they do?
Year on year, their profits went down. Apparently, the Switch is doing pretty well for them. Like, obviously, they're not going away, and they're going to find other ways to diversify their business.
Yeah.
But, like every decision like this, every new service like this from a publisher, or Microsoft or PlayStation, GameStop is becoming not less relevant, but kind of. Yeah.
Unless you like physical games. I love physical, so.
I was actually... That's what my point was going to be, is I have a comic book store about 100 yards from me, and digital comics have taken over. So I think you'll always have those fans who like their physical items. Mm-hmm. But to me, the one, you know, I heard some people say, well, I'm not really in love with the library. And I totally get that, because depending on what you want to get, what's there. To me, though, when it comes to PSN in particular, I'm just going to be honest, because I tweeted about this a couple days ago. I think that they have so many problems, everything from being hacked, even if you have second stage authorization, to horrible download speeds. I believe that what we're seeing here is the difference between the two companies, and one that, like it or hate it, Microsoft is a software company, right?
Mm.
And they're understanding how to move things. Their metrics, the data, which is that's my subject matter. That's the data they get. They know what people use, how they do it. They know where to put things. Sony does a really good job. They got a powerful system, and they've got better first party. But their infrastructure, I mean, I'm not talking about the hacking, the old hacking. That was dumb enough. But I'm talking about situations like the current hacking, where if somebody gets a hack and you have second stage authorization, some people are losing their accounts forever. And Sony's like, yep, you're screwed. You know, somebody stole your PS4. That's the new thing now, where somebody can register your PS4 as their PS4 somewhere else, and they get all your games, and Sony doesn't have the best steps in place to fix those issues, but their speed is terrible. I want Sony to actually just get equal to Xbox of old, let alone match Game Pass. They need to really fix things. For example, right now, that's if right. I go in and try to add a code on their website, there's a very good chance their code will just be like, sorry, you can't enter a code right now, and go to like the most horrible generic Japanese all no English writing webpage. Like they show a lack of care, or at least a lack of knowledge about that. They just want you to pay $10 for a rental. And you're like, that's not, you don't get me that way. You get me with a working system, and then I buy into that system. So, I mean, hey, here's a car. Brakes will be included later. You know, fuck you. Like, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard of. And a lot of these companies like to do it. So Nintendo's the same way, guys. I'm done. I'm so tired of the Switch. It needs to have its digital storefront up, its old games up. I mean, like, it needs to, all that kind of stuff should have been done day one. Like, some of this stuff is just starting to piss me off. Like, it's, you know,
when it comes to the Switch, I'm like needle withholding judgment until E3. I think they're going to have a big announcement with Virtual Console and stuff at E3. I could be wrong.
They have to.
I completely agree. They need to release Virtual Console, but that's a side
apparently
discussion.
It's selling well regardless, though, which I gotta admit, I mean, I like my Switch a lot, but that confuses the fuck out of me. I like it, but that really puzzles me. I mean, they have had two games come out of value, and they're selling pretty
well. It's the idea that people are being sold on, the fact that you can play anywhere, like, regardless of what games there are currently. I can see why so many people want to buy it. I mean, that's the whole reason I wanted to buy it. If Switch was another traditional regular console that you could only play at home, I wouldn't have bought it, because I would have looked at the game library and thought, well, you've just got Zelda and you've just got Odyssey coming out whenever it is. But the fact that you can take it on the go, man, it's perfect. Like Mario Kart 8, that is the best game to play on a train, because you can finish a cup and a half or something of that game, and it's just fucking awesome time. It's really, really fun. But I agree, they need Virtual Console very soon, because now I'm looking towards games and thinking, all right, I'm about to play Street Fighter 2, but it's an old game. What's the next big title for me after Zelda? You got Monster Hunter, you've got Dragon Ball Xenoverse, which I am looking forward to, Super Mario Odyssey, but... Payday, yeah, but they need a little bit more.
Their rehashes, like Xenoverse, it's interesting, but like I've played Xenoverse 1 and 2 a lot, so it's like I don't have a reason to buy it on the Switch.
Fair enough.
You know, they just
Skyrim. They do have Skyrim, but you know, again, 2011 game.
Yeah, I've bought Skyrim a million and one times. That's the thing. It's like, and we've rehashed this discussion so many times, so we won't stick on it too long. It's just that's why I'm confused. It's got the fucking awesome idea as a gamer. Like, it's the ideal system for me. You know, I loved my Vita, and the Switch is an ideal step up in every shape and form. They just need the games. They just need the games, or else it's going to end up like the Vita, where everyone's going to be like, I love it so much, but it fucking sucks.
It should be called Nintendo Game Pass, technically. Microsoft is doing something Nintendo should be doing right now. Mm-hmm. And you should, right now, I should be paying $9 a month to play all the old Nintendo titles.
You know
right
what? I do believe that with the Game Pass now, when they release a Virtual Console, instead of, like, you could have the option of buying a game or, you know, renting the Virtual Console service or Game Pass, whatever you call it, and then you get access to all of those games for a certain amount of dollars every month. I think that would be great, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. You know what bothers me? It's a little bit like buying a sports car and putting a fucking giant block of wood under the gas pedal, because for me, I have bandwidth caps. So Microsoft is like, hey, here's 130 games. And I'm like, yeah, once I get to 3, because of my risque video downloading, just joking, I don't have a lot of bandwidth. I mean, and a YouTuber, especially a YouTuber, uploading, downloading all the stuff we do. Fuck, man, I'm already out. I hit it. Like, now, I was close, and we're on the 26th. But for this month, I had a ton of space until they announced it. And as of yesterday, I instantly was over. Like, it was just like... Mm-hmm. Got this game. And I was sitting there going, this is so weird, because not only am I paying for internet and I'm paying for early access, or I'm sorry, Microsoft Game Pass, and I'm paying for Xbox Live. The fact is that the delivery service for me in particular, Comcast, has bandwidth caps. So I actually can't get
Comcast.
Like, I can't get really what I've paid for. Dude. It's so weird. I don't know if anything, it would be almost like gas stations just raising the price and saying, you know what? You got a 20-gallon gas tank. Here's 5 gallons. You're like,
why is it
200 miles?
Why is it that Comcast still has bandwidth limits on it.
Not still. They've started adding them. They're doing the opposite of everybody else.
What?
Yeah. Comcast just
so you
now
pay more
is
for more that they could have already given you.
Exactly.
Is there a plan where you can have unlimited data?
There is. It's another $50 or $75.
Exactly.
On top of which. So you're talking 170 for me, because I have business internet anyway for faster speed for uploading. I think that would be about $165 or $175.
That's insane. That's absolutely insane. Like right now where I am, I think it's around $90 to $100 a month. I have pretty good internet. Like one of the few. It's increasing, but one of the few households in Australia that does have good internet, about 100 down, 40 up, and I have unlimited data for $100 a month. It's still expensive, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a weird situation to be restricted for stuff you paid for. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just really odd.
Yeah, it's a complete cap. That's the best way of putting it. It's pretty unfair. But like you said, Garrick, that's the other thing, is that some people won't even get full use out of the Game Pass because of the internet.
That's what I meant.
Bandwidth cap. So it's an awkward position to be in. Once again, one of those things where it's situational in a lot of ways.
I have a question. Wait a minute. If Maddie gives me Gears and I play Gears with his physical copy, and then I also have an account with Game Pass, will I have to download it again? Because if not, then there's some ways around for some people.
That's it.
Do you see what I'm saying? If it's already installed,
I doubt it. Because
I doubt it.
What would be the point? it wouldn't make sense. Like, if you got Game Pass and then you're like, "Well, I can't download it, but I can go buy
borrow
version."
It. I was talking about like borrowing it from a friend.
But that's such a limited circumstance. Like, no one would go, like, aside from that, the only other option is to buy a pre-owned version for a couple of dollars, and then that way you don't have to download it, but then you're already buying the game, so, you know.
Yeah. I just wonder if it works, like, at all, like, technically. And remember, this is, I hope everybody remembers, Game Pass is what the Xbox One was originally planned to do day one. So it's very interesting that we've made this circle. And that's true. Microsoft shows that they didn't handle the PR up front, and they could have. They could have explained what these systems were day one, and they didn't. And they had to rejigger the entire system. And we are now right exactly where we would have started 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
It is all like down to Phil Spencer. But
yeah,
Phil Spencer has.
He's the fucking man.
he's like, you don't have to agree with everything that he does, right?
Oh, but of course.
He has just turned this ship around, and he's doing such a fucking amazing job with that company. I couldn't imagine anyone better to run that, and I hope he's getting his damn bonuses because he deserves it.
He finds out he's like living in a shack and he got a yurt.
can I eat this week? No, get the Game Pass out.
I have a feeling he's probably doing quite well.
I can only imagine, because I've seen the I don't know why I was reading about it, but Larry Erb, there was something about like how he was offered different jobs from outside of Microsoft, and like the money they were offering to pay that guy was fucking insane, and he stayed with Microsoft, and I'm assuming it's because they also were probably paying him pretty well. So,
like, I really like Larry Herb, Major Nelson. I met him last year at PAX Australia, and he's such a cool guy, you know. Really likable.
When I saw him at PAX East, I was like, I just wanted to say something, but I was like, I imagine saying hi and then him stopping, and I'm like, fuck, what do I say next?
I accosted Phil Spencer at where were we? We were at Jesus, that would have been GDC. He was walking down the street, and I'm like, Phil, you fucking rock! And he looked over at me, and he knows the channel. So he's like, what's up, man? I was like, nothing. That's all I have to say. I'm just going to scream at you on the side of the street. He just started laughing, and then we walked off. He's probably like, fuck, man, this is the one thing I hate about being he was a nice guy. But that's a cool thing, too, is like Jack Trenton for Sony really showed how a person can be honest and awesome. Peter Moore, Phil Spencer, those guys are, I personally believe, and Larry to a lesser extent, just because of positioning, I think that it shows that some of the guys who are in there are actually fairly passionate, like, gamers, and understand Yeah, they're never your friend, right? They're trying to make money. But what they do understand is they have a common place with you. And they're like, I was a gamer, or I am a gamer, and I get it. So even if I get it and I'm still trying to get mine, they understand that so is the gamer. See, that's the thing. A lot of gamers like to pretend we're all moral and be like, I am the pastor of gaming. No, you're not. Fuck off. You're not. So what happens is the game developer's trying to make money. You're trying to get the most out of it. And yet you yell that they're trying to get more from you. It's like, you know, you're trying to get more as well. So I think it's fair. I think there's some really nice people in the industry, and it's nice to see a lot of folks looking at these guys and going, oh, and I have to hats off to IGN because what's his name? Ryan McCafferty's videos where he does, I think it's just called Inside. I can't remember, but where he has people come on. Jack Trenton came on and he just started talking, and it's very open. And Phil That's Spencer's cool. come on and it's amazing. Peter Molyneux's come on. And you, when you leave, you're like, I get it. Like, I get it. You know, I know much more about this person than 5 years of PR announcements.
I need to watch that, those interviews then.
Dude,
that sounds really interesting.
Ryan is excellent. I love him.
He is Adam Sessler. I love, you know, but he's gone for the
Adam
most part.
Sessler.
But Ryan is, I think, in many ways, sort of an evolution of that. And those videos are fucking fantastic. When he got Jack Trenton to basically admit, Jack's like, nobody at Sony would apologize for the fucking hack. And he just decided, if I get fired, I get fired. And he just walked out and he's like, before we begin, and everybody at Sony was like, what are you doing? And he's like, before we begin, I just want to apologize to everybody. And people are like, that's unscripted. It's almost unheard of. And Sony was like, oh, okay. And Jack was like, I'm just going to say it. And I'm going to apologize to people, because we had never apologized. I don't know. I like that. It shows that, you know, they're people too.
Down to earth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's that wraps up the news I had on my list. You guys got any more to toss out there?
I'll let Lone go. He's got some.
Well, I was going to ask you, Carrick, how long do you have? How long can we keep you here shackled?
Oh, actually, I'm good to go because of the other person won't be here for many hours.
The other person.
Well, just in case there's some hotties out there hoping that Carrick the Lumberjack is free, I don't want to say my wife. Just joking. I always say that because that one person who sent me the email or sent me the package, I don't know if I told you guys, but I had a fan/hater and he sent me a personal package here to my home, and it was pretty unacceptable. So a lot of times I won't say, it was pretty gnarly, all because of a review. And so
video games are a matter of life or death. Am I right?
I usually like change around what I say to.
God damn.
I'm good. What do we got going on?
All righty. So I want to really talk about Prey 2's original story. I don't know if you saw this article run on Eurogamer. So obviously Prey 2 was canceled, became the Preys we know today. I liked the game. I thought it had a really interesting story. But Eurogamer did this piece on the original story for Prey 2, and I just want to read it, just like three paragraphs. It's not that long. Mm-hmm. And I want to read it to you and see what you guys think, because the twist in the end, I reckon that would have been fantastic in a game.
This is going to kill me.
It's going to kill you, all right? So the main character is called...
I love the concept for the original second Prey.
But you know what's interesting, and as I read this, you'll see where the Preys we know it today got its influence from, in terms of you get tested for the neuromods and your memory gets reset. But anyway, so the main character's name is Demasi, all right? So he's the reluctant hero of Prey, was intended to play a much larger role in Prey 2 than it appeared when the game was first announced. The two of them would eventually meet up. The two of them, what are they talking about here?
Main
I think it's another character. Yeah. The two of them would eventually meet up and work together to take down the game's real villains. But it's revealed near the end that the end of the game, that every time Samuels dies, that's the other character, he'd reawaken in his apartment on Exodus, apparently none the worse for wear, but with no memory of his death and reincarnation. So this is because every time Samuels died, his consciousness would be transferred into a new clone. The source unknown, but from the sounds of it, somehow connected to Tommy, leaving him with no memory of the experience, something that happened literally hundreds of times during his 10 years on Exodus. The true extent of this process would be made clear during the final attack on the bad guys, when he'd enter a room filled with dozens of dead clones, evidence of his past efforts, and repeated failures to bring them down. But the real twist is that when all is said and done, Samuels would eventually get back to Earth, where he'd live a long and happy life, raise a family, and eventually die peacefully, surrounded by his loved ones, only to awaken in his apartment on Exodus in a new clone body. So you would play as this character that constantly has, you know, essentially his memory reset, and then towards the end, you would have a happy life, everything is done, you're with your family, and then your body gets reset again. Wouldn't have just that just been a fucking mind fuck in the end?
Yeah, that you thought you had the peaceful ending, and you woke up, and it's like, hey, it's happening again.
You know what? Like, very, very similar thing with Soma. I know, Carrick, you don't like it, but I won't give spoilers, but the way that game ends, it's just like, oh, fuck you.
You know, there was a rumor that Prey 2's story had some issues with another title, and I'm sure, without spoiling anything, that Maddie knows what title I'm going to talk about, but there's a particular cyclic storytelling in a game that just got released recently that's a sort of an action style. And there's a consistent retelling and a consistent clone, consistent waking up, consistent not having memories. And what's funny is one of the endings is very close to what you just described. And so that adds to me even more credence to the rumor that somewhere, almost like Armageddon and Deep Impact, somebody said, here's our story. Somebody said, here's our story. And somebody else went, oh, shit. I could be wrong, but that story is very close to another game that just came out a couple months ago.
The thing with the psychological transferring of consciousness is that one game that I thought did it really well was Zero Escape: Virtue's Last Reward. The only difference is that is a game that I don't think a lot of people have played. It's a visual novel and a puzzle game. It's definitely a game that's cult classic. So that's funny that these games about transferring your conscience into another body or something like that. Prey, one game Carrick and I won't mention, Zero Escape, and now this original Prey 2 concept. It's funny how it's just recently started really rolling, because it's a unique mindfuckery type of storytelling, but it's become really common, and now it's the best way to handle it is that game we won't mention and the emotions involved in said game, in my personal opinion. So what's awesome, though, is that when I looked at the original Prey 2, I never viewed that as a story game. I mean, I remember being sold entirely on the gameplay because, you know, I saw him, and at the time it was more revolutionary, but the guy was, like, sliding on the ground, throwing those fucking bull ass, like, wrapping up someone's ankles. You'd interrogate them if you killed them or if you were nice to them and, you know, got the information out of them. Like, based on how your interrogation sequence went, that would change up how the story progressed. I really like that because it seemed like a modernized, better version of Star Wars Bounty Hunter. And so I was really on board with that game. Still, even though I like the first Prey reboot, I have to say that I still find it a shame that second one got canceled. Not because I didn't like it as much as I wanted to, but I think the second one had a lot of potential as well. So it's like,
I think, to be honest, if that had played out, I would have liked that story more than this Prey. Not to say that I didn't like this Prey, but I think that kind of story, it would have mind fucked me at the end. And again, add another game to that list of transferring consciousness is Soma, right? The only kind of worry that I have with that game, that style of storytelling, is that it gets too close to the whole "it was a dream" mechanic. Like, you could use that and then, I guess, undermine the entire story, which I don't think. I'll stop talking because I want to spoil the game.
Yeah. See, I know, Carrick, you fucking love Prey. You said you beat it 4 times.
Just now.
Yeah.
You beat it a 4th time.
Okay,
here's why. Let me tell you something, Maddie, and you being totally honest, I think it's not any better than what you think, because that's your experience, right? So, like, I don't think your score or whatever your thought process is bad. But something that Lone and I talked about, and something I had wanted to mention, we haven't got a chance. I personally believe that because you came off of Persona, and I did not, I came off of another game, and you enter this type of storytelling, that there is a chance that it does not play as well if you're coming off a directed, and especially one of your favorite games, I'm going to be honest, but you come off of this and you go into it. Now, I don't think Prey would have been magically better for you, Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you were talking about not getting story, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, there's story literally everywhere, even in like level structure. But it dawned on me, if I had come off Persona, and this is the honest truth, if I'd come off Persona, I might have had the same issue as you did if I had come off Persona, but I didn't. But I liked Persona's very, like, you know, 120 hours of fucking, you know, of school. But then if I go into this wide open, almost no idea what's going on, I don't know if I would have been as open to it. And
you don't have to apologize for saying that, by the way. And I think that's a good point. I don't think I do a good job of, I forgot what term you used.
Motor setting?
Motor set. Where you kind of reset before the next game. Like, I don't imprint my expectations on a long JRPG onto a, I wouldn't even call it probably an RPG, really.
First person
storytelling kind of thing. Because I know what type of games to expect from Arcane. My frustration really boiled down to some of the game mechanics and how, depending on how you played the game, it could pan out really good, or in my case, it didn't pan out that well. Where, you know, I was doing some of the story, I was like, all right, I want to do some side stuff, and I go back, and because during the story, enemies respawn because of certain things happening, I'm like, fuck, you know, I wanted to go back, but now it's like it gets a little more tedious. Where, say, I was going through the story, and when I unlocked that side quest, I immediately went and did it. Then it's different.
You know what? I do want to touch on that, the whole, you know, I don't even remember what they're called, the Typhon, whatever. Typhon. They multiply. That's why when you go back to a room that they've respawned. I think that's, I don't want to say lazy, but I think it's stupid. I understand how loosely it makes sense that, you know, when you go back to a room, there are enemies there because they've multiplied or whatever it is. But it just makes side questing a chore. And while it makes sense narrative-wise, gameplay-wise, it didn't make it fun. I didn't enjoy, like, when I wanted to do a side quest, thinking, because I was on a harder difficulty, thinking, oh, fuck, I only have this amount of items. If I go back and do the side quest, I'm going to get fucked up by these enemies, and I'm probably going to lose a bunch of ammo and lose a bunch of items. Is it worth it? Is it worth going back? And usually I'd say, no, I'll just do the main story. I didn't like that, to be honest. And can we reach a certain point in this podcast where we start talking about spoilers? Because there's one bit about Prey.
I think we're deep enough.
All right, so this is Prey spoilers.
Yeah.
It's going to ruin the game.
If you've not played Prey, the reboot by Arcane Studios, released May, I think, 17th or something along those lines.
15th,
then please go play it if you would like to, and then come back to the show. But if you have played it and you would like to hear a little bit of spoilers, skip ahead one minute. Yeah, or I will have timestamps in the description clearly labeling. Yeah. That's what I've been writing down on my phone the whole time.
That's what we'll do.
Yeah, so if you guys want to skip to another segment, go ahead and do so. And now, Lone, please continue.
Okay. I've been waiting
for this. I'll say that much.
All right. Let's talk about this. The ending of Prey, I think it was leaning towards the whole, it was a dream, okay? I don't think it reached that point, so I wasn't disappointed in that regard. And I think the ending was interesting, and the whole mechanic of we're trying to teach this type, like this Phantom, not teach, but give him the memories of Morgan to try and reach this truce or try and connect with the race that has just destroyed the Earth. I liked that. What I didn't like, and what kind of pissed me off, is that I played that whole game not getting one alien neuromod. Not one, because I thought the ending would have been so bad if I experimented with alien neuromods. So I just got the regular ones. But it didn't matter in the end. Unless you killed everyone, you got every alien neuromod, I don't believe, like, I think there was only, it was very hard to get the ending where they're like, oh, we fucked it up, we got to start again, and they kill the Phantom in the chair, right? Unless you played so bad to get to that point, You usually got the ending where you had the chance to shake shake Morgan's hand or to kill everyone in the room, and that's essentially one. It's the good ending. Doesn't matter what the robots say about you, and they're like, well, he saved me. Well, he did this, he did that. So long as Morgan got to the point where you could shake his hand, the Phantom got to the point where you could shake Alex's hand. That's essentially the good ending. And I was pissed off because I went through that game not using one alien neuromod because I thought I was going to get a terrible ending if I did, and I didn't. So the choice in that game is really, really lame. I hated that with a passion. That's just my opinion.
I feel like Garrick's gonna pop off because I know Lone and I sit on the same spectrum of the ending. I see. My thing though is It wasn't like how I built my character. I said, screw it. I was like, I like the alien powers. This game's pretty hard. I'm going to use the alien powers. So, and I think if you use the alien powers, the game actually gets harder, which I thought was pretty cool. And I'm just assuming on that part, because some people have said, oh, I didn't use the alien powers. It was still a pretty easy game. And I'm like, I used the alien powers and had a lot of
trouble. Well,
you have
the turrets that fire at you, and aliens notice you easily, more easy. So it does get harder. Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. But for me, I did use them. What rubbed me really the wrong way is that I guess it's what you saw the potential of, because I like how the game slipped in choice that you didn't know about until you beat the game. So Dr. Iwe, I think his name is, the guy
Iwe,
there we go. He's in space and he's like, hey, yeah. I need your help. And I was like trying to, I'm putting in the code, like hacking it, trying to think, I don't know why me fucking opening up his container, I thought that was going to help him.
And you killed him.
Yeah, he's like, hey, what are you, like that. And he just spaces out. I'm like, oh.
I did that too. Yeah, I'm like, I reloaded the save.
I felt so dumb. I'm like, wow, I just fucking killed him. Why did I think opening it would help him? But yeah, so like that part, I was like, oh, I'm just going to roll with what happened here. Whatever. We're going to see how much consequence happens. Then you get to the part where the four operators are sitting around you.
Yeah.
And he's like, he killed me. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, you know, that's a guy I accidentally spaced. And then the game, I had this 3 out of 4 split, and they still let me make the decision. They're like, what are you going to do? Are you going to shake my hand, or are you going to kill me? So I know it's not really an RPG, but my issue lies in the fact that they clearly were experimenting on the Typhon to see if they had any way of reaching a truce, humanizing it, seeing what it was like through the eyes of a human, and then the Typhon still makes the choice. I didn't get that. I thought it would make more sense if, based off how the experience was handled, what the operators and Morgan would choose to do. Would they go, he saved us for the most part, you know, let's try to work this truce out, or and the handshake happens naturally, or he fucking killed us, what do we do? And
great point.
They take us out, or if you're really bad, like you said, You know, you kill everyone, you go all alien powers, and I'm not just talking main characters, I'm talking, like, you just go into that one section where there's, like, all these people bunkered down in the cargo bay, and you kill them, too. Like, you fucking kill everyone. That, you automatically do that thing where you stab Morgan in the stomach. Like, that would have been cool, because my biggest issue, and once again, I'm going to reiterate, I know it's not an RPG, really, but I saw so much potential in a choice and consequence here that was possible. It wasn't really anything overbearing like an RPG with branching story paths. This is more so something that connected to the ending, and you could have had like a couple of permutations that actually made it feel like, wow, I want to go back and do that again.
Yeah.
And I felt they dropped the ball on that. That was my probably number one sour point with the game.
And I know Carrick wants to jump into it. I just want to quickly say, I agree with what you're saying. And in that regard, it shouldn't just be, so long as you killed everyone and used every alien neuromod, that's the only way you get the bad ending. There should be a kind of a spectrum here where if you killed a couple of the operators and if you used some alien neuromods, that should be enough for them not to trust you. Not just because if you've just killed everyone, that's the only thing that makes them not trust you.
Well, yeah, put yourself in their shoes, right?
There had to be more of a gray line there. Like, for instance, there are the four operators there and there are, let's say, 10 alien neuromods. It's a bad guess, but If you killed two of them and used 5 alien neuromods, then that's enough for them not to trust you. That would have been better, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. The only issue
instead
that
of just
pops
all
up
or
with
nothing.
That, and then I want to hear Carrick's thoughts. The only issue that I guess pops up with that is that a player could kind of toe the line and get an ending they don't want. Or that
but you
didn't
know that. You didn't know that at the start.
Exactly.
Right?
But Carrick, curious to...
I mean, in a way, we're arguing... So, or not arguing, we're talking about something that happens in all games, which is sort of a suspension of disbelief of your actions having any sort of consequences. Yeah. So I felt that there were consequences. Maybe they weren't the best, so I wouldn't disagree with almost anything that you guys said, if that's what you felt when you got to the ending.
Okay.
I felt two things happened and continue to happen whenever I replay that game, just magnificently. The first is the fact that when you get the alien mods, the fact that the world you have created prior turns against you is fantastic. And I quite literally can't remember another title where if you put a turret down and you're using these mods, that turret that you fucking put down will turn on you. That's insane. That is next level. The the stuff that I noticed, if you watch the Game of Sutra video where they take 2 hours and they play the first 2 hours with the developer and he talks about the layered storytelling, that's the stuff I noticed. So what I noticed was the story as I was experiencing it. And then you get to the ending, and to be honest, I didn't find it worse than most game endings. I didn't maybe find it better than most after I beat it multiple times, but I wasn't so shocked or so like, you know, like Lone was really pissed about something. Lone was also on a difficulty that I played second time through. And there's the situation, and we talk about this all the time, and this is one of the reasons why I'm bothered by the possibility of Far Cry. It's the fact that when you have a game that's a sandbox style, you have a game that is filled with a lot of choice, the balancing towards the hard can become almost impossible to make sure that the narrative is told in a cohesive fashion to the game player. And so when Maddie comes off of Persona with a very cohesive storytelling, even if it's crazy, weird shit, he still gets it, right? Yeah. But when you go into Prey and you have an audio log here and a person telling you a random thing here and then a robot lying to you here and then another one saying that he's lying about the thing that you found. And if you experience it after 40 deaths because the game is hard, it will have less impact. And that's one of the reasons why I believe that developers need to start going with the fact that if you want to make a game harder or easier, remove easy, medium, and hard, and start allowing for options within the game itself to be changed. Allow for me to adjust that pickups have a certain amount of weapon bullets. But let me also say I don't want to have more damage be done to me. And the reason why is because I think developers are losing, with this many gamers playing, that developers are losing that cohesive structure, and so they're trying to tell it in this open fashion, and that is not going to be the same. I had somebody who just told me about Nier, and they're like, I didn't understand any of it. It was so fucking hard. And I'm like, I get it. I get it. I totally get where that person's coming from. And I think that is a problem. I wouldn't even say with the game developers.
What's weird, though,
it's a problem with game development.
In that specific instance with Nier, what's strange is that they have not only difficulty settings, but they also have chips for specific difficulties. That's what's strange about that one, but
yeah, that's it. That is strange. I actually just dawned on me. They do. And yeah, I don't know. I agree with you guys though. I just didn't experience it in the way you did. Yeah. And so I think that that's a big deal.
I still think it was a great game, but
yeah, I just want to say something about respawning enemies. It may be lazy. It may be, but I'm going to tell you, when I kill the 40th guard in a Thief game, which is one of my favorite games of all time, and then I return and he's back. In Thief 3, for example, where they have the open world levels, any of these games where you have consistently returning enemies, I'm going to be honest, I will just bite into whatever shitty explanation they give because it's better than nothing. Yeah, I'll just be like, okay, I've killed this dude 800 times. He said the same things. He's got the same fucking voice actor. Like, why is Mel returning from the dead? Now I don't even care about me. I want to investigate Mel. Is Mel, you know, some kind of resurrectionist? Like, how is this occurring with Mel? So to me, I'm okay. If they're like, hey, you know, the Typhon are doing it for this reason, I'm like, whatever. I'll buy off on that.
Fallout kind of does that where you clear out an area and then half hour later they're back because, you know, the Raiders took over the area now and, you know, they come back because they're a dominant gang in the region. So it's like, yeah, I guess, you know, situationally it always makes sense, but it never makes it less tedious. It just makes more sense. As for the storytelling in the game, I did appreciate the layered storytelling, especially when you go back that second time. And what was a general line, I made this in my video about Chris Avalon, where what would be received as a general line of dialogue after that second playthrough, you're like, oh fuck, that meant that.
And,
you know, that's littered all throughout Prey in a second playthrough. And so that's one thing I really do appreciate about the game is its writing. I think that's probably one of its strongest qualities. It's just that I feel like with all that ability, that's why the ending really felt dropped the ball, because there was potential for it to be, you know, not only a fantastic ending, but I feel like one of the best choice consequence endings that we've seen in gaming in a fucking long time. I mean, God, I can't think of the last game that maybe first one that comes to mind is like Life is Strange, maybe, where, like, you know, your choices have like this direct impact on the narrative and you will get multiple endings that actually are truly different, not just good and evil, you know, like actual, this is what you did, this is the impact, and now there's another impact later on because you did that. That's the type of shit.
And you know what? I think the reason why you're saying that there was so much potential there is because I strongly believe that in the lead up to the ending, the game built it up fantastically. I think it kept you intrigued enough. It gave you enough information as you plotted along to be, you know, kept interested in the story. And I think it climaxed really well. Like, it led towards the climax really well. I think that was definitely the case. It's just that if this is probably, this was the intention of the game. So for instance, like when you first use alien neuromods, January warns you, well, I don't know if you're going to be yourself or something like that when you start using them. So the game puts that kind of sliver of doubt in your mind. And it just so happened that I decided at that point not to use any because I was so fearful of the consequences. But then I get to the end and figure out, fuck, I could have used some and it still would have been okay. And that's the exact, like, the game was intending to do that. That it put just enough doubt in my mind to make that decision, but actually it wasn't going to end out as bad as I thought it would. So that was actually kind of, it was shitty because I didn't get to use any alien neuromods, but it was also brilliant in how it made me choose in that regard. Yeah, so
the
it's a double-edged sword.
With its, for example, terminals, and you'll read about shit about, like, people are saying about you, more than you, I should say. Yeah, like you said, that little self-doubt, they planted a lot, like, fucking Alex always saying, like, Morgan, you're not yourself. Just come, we'll talk, we'll straighten this out. And you're like, what's wrong with me? I think I'm fine. Like, am I going to look in the mirror and see someone that's not me? That's kind of what I was expecting, is the whole game, like, the mirrors don't work. And I realized that's a tech thing. I was waiting to the end of the game. They're like, Morgan, look at yourself. And he spins the fucking chair and, like, you're a typhoon because you've been using so many neural mods or something like that. I was expecting something along those lines too in the back of my head, but that's the type of storytelling I did like in the game, was a lot of the almost Deus Ex storytelling, a lot through the imaginative interactions between characters, the audio logs, that type of stuff. I really liked.
Also, as well, that, and this is interesting because this is from the experience of someone else that decided to do the December quest line where you end the game early. I don't know if you ever actually did that, but he said that when he did that quest line because he was curious and the game got ended early, it ruined the story for him because then he realized what it was all about. Because if you take that ending, you finish that quest, what happens? You wake up in their chair and Alex is like, nah, we fucked up. This is a bad phantom, whatever. We got to do it again. Start over. And then he's like, oh, fuck, I've realized that it's an imagination or a testing that's going on or whatever it is. But
the way I think of it is, as a developer, they're not that stupid. They don't put that there early in the game. You can get it so easily way before the game even starts to end. They know you can get that so easily. So you go ahead, you do it. They're like, escape the station, save game. You leave. No one's going to shut off the game after that. I'm sorry. Like, I can't imagine anyone.
You're right.
And so it's like, when that happened for me, I was like, I had a feeling. I was like, I know I'm not actually me on this space station. I don't know what they're doing to me right now. It's something with my head. But at that point, that's when I knew. And also, when you first pass through the neural waves that were, as there was more Typhon activity or something like that, they did little, like, cutaways, and, like, you'd hear Alex's voice, and they were, like, operating on you. That's when I was like, you know, okay, what's going on here? And I've realized, in general, this isn't specific to Prey. I'm not a huge fan of that storytelling, that directly telling you something's happening or something will happen. Persona 5 did that, and we were saying how that's one of my favorite games. But Persona 5, like, openly says, in the beginning of the game, oh, yeah, you have a traitor in your group. So the whole time, I'm like, who the fuck's a traitor? And I won't get off track with Persona. There's a twist in Persona that everyone thinks is the twist, but there's really a twist within the plot twist.
Yeah.
That people completely fucking miss. But what happened is that original one twist actually could have been pretty good if the game didn't say, oh, there's a traitor among you. You know, and just not become a fan of that type of storytelling. That's not specific to Prey. Because I like to just have it unfold. Like, especially, and I've always had this, like, when a game starts at the end and you're like, what's going on? And then it, like, resets you 3 years prior. And it fills up all of that until then. I usually don't like that either. So it's actually pretty remarkable that I liked Persona 5 so much, because they did a type of storytelling I generally don't like. It's like I said, it's usually nothing specific to Prey. It just has to be done exponentially well. And that's really all I can say. Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to a fan of Prey, and we were discussing like fan myths about the title or ideas of what they thought. And one of the guys was like, other than one or two little missteps at the ending, there was a rumor that it's all a game and you're actually, all the humans are actually the creatures and they're trying to create you as the best spy and the best
that's
spy.
Right.
And I was like, that's, yeah. And I told him, I'm like, in all honesty, right up until the ending, I actually thought that. So I would say that maybe what we're looking at, it's possible that they ran out of money, or like a Star Wars 2, Knights of the Old Republic 2 kind of thing, because the ending sounds like, to Maddie, that would be an equivalent ending, you know, where it sort of drops off and you're like, whoa, I didn't get what I wanted. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Chris ever is able to say why he did that. He may be open to answering that. He may be one of those guys that's just like, you know what, I'm not going to tell you what the true story of it is. But if you play the game, if you do certain things in certain order, it can make you believe you are being primed. You are being primed to sort of decide, are you going to revert back to being an alien? Like, and then which side is actually doing this testing? Because where you're doing the testing is even weird when you think about it. Like, there's some,
and then when you're the human playing the game itself in that second, third, fourth playthrough, whatever, it's like you're almost like a totally different perspective at that point.
Oh, dude, I'm going to be honest. Like, that might be one of the reasons why I've enjoyed replaying it, because I'm consistently, and even when the trailers first came out, the guy looking at his eye and all this stuff, I'm like, there's something. There's different ways you can go, and that's one of the things I do like. I think Soma at the ending was a little too, here's what's going on, and they could have probably been a little cloudier there, and it would have been even, you know, it would have been like, whoa, what's up? I think that Prey could have done that as well, had an ending where you were like, wait, am I this or that? That would have been very cool. I mean, one of those things is, I have to say, pretty phenomenal that we're all talking about an ending of a game when less than 18% of people beat a game.
I was going to say something similar to that. The fact that we're all here talking about this game for, I don't know, 20 minutes now, I think it shows that, one, this game was good, and then the story was fantastic.
That's what I
right?
said.
Like,
I didn't.
We're so invested in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not to cut you off, but it's just a thought that came to me is that I instantly shut off the game. I was kind of aggravated. I walked away from my computer. I was like, God, you got to be kidding me. And then I sat down later that night. I talked with some friends about it. And then we had another discussion. And then we had another one. Like, fucking night after night after night, we kept talking about this ending. And that's when I was like, holy shit. Like, we keep talking about it. This is a good ending in a way. Because there's so much discussion that spawns about it. Now, the other thing that I think kind of squishes that bug is with Prey's ending, it's about as good as the marketing campaign for Prey 2. That'll inevitably happen. When they start talking about that, you have this canon ending, and that's when all the imagination, all the fan theories, all the myths get swept under the rug. Because I highly doubt this is going to be a one-off. Maybe, though, it could be. We did talk a little bit about the lack of marketing for this game, how they didn't seem to invest much in it. So it could be. And if so, then this is a game that is going to be really in the discussion, I'd say, at least for our show, for a long while.
Definitely.
But
you know what I'm really interested in, though, is where they actually take it with DLC, etc. Like, if they even have DLC, because even at the end of that game, again, like, I'm so interested to talk about this because
Dishonored 2 hasn't even had DLC. It's like, no. Since what will Prey even have it? It's like, I don't know.
But like, I'm so interested to talk about it because it was a fantastic story. Mm-hmm. It's what actually happened to Morgan, because we don't know, do we? Because you get to the end, Alex is doing this testing on this Phantom, showing you the memories of Morgan, but we don't actually know what happened to Morgan. Did he escape? Did he stay on the thing and die?
Oops, sorry, hit the mic. When you shake hands, the human hand comes out of the Typhon. I was like, Morgan the Typhon?
Is it turning? It was really weird. And then also as well, how did the aliens actually manage to make it to Earth? What, did someone betray them? Like, there's so much left to be told. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, the next Prey, if this is successful and, you know, they want to make another game, it would be focusing on the aliens invading Earth, probably, anyways, if they want to continue the story. But there's still so much to be told to get to that point that I can't wait for DLC if it comes out.
Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued. I mean, the one fantastic part about the game was its environment, because the level design was excellent, which I expected in an arcane game, but it also told you a lot about the universe you were in, but also that information you're paying attention to could have turned into something that fucking kills you. And that tension between those things just, oh man, it made exploration a blast. Although, like I said, I wasn't a fan of backtracking a lot. Not in the way where I was definitely going to go back, but I'm talking about the questing and the enemies respawning, but it made it definitely that much more enjoyable because there was just so much. It was so information rich.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, it is cool that we're talking about it with, you know, we've mentioned a BioShock, we've mentioned Soma, we've mentioned games that a lot of people really like. And the fact that we have one in that genre is, I mean, you know, whether it, all games are going to have a failure of some type, liked and disliked. It's cool to just, it's cool to have another representation in, I will say, a game genre that isn't necessarily always represented without being Call of Duty. Like, it, you know, it doesn't require a ton of shooting if you don't want to. And I love that. I think that's so cool. I can't, I mean, my hope is that whether Prey has a sequel or not, other companies look and go, you know what? We can, we don't need Dishonored. Dishonored's great because you're juggling people's heads and you're doing backflips. Yeah. Great. That's cool. It makes you feel like a superhero because it is the superhero. What happens in Prey is I'm the superhero. I'm the one who decided to stick the glue gun against the wall and run up it. I'm the one who decided to block doors and windows with the glue gun. I'm the one who did those. And there's a difference. Something about Dishonored just doesn't, and I know people love that game, but something about it just doesn't speak to me as high when it's all programmed in. And it's like, this is effortless. Yes, because it's all programmed exactly the fucking same for everybody. But in Prey, the stories we've all told are different experiences in a wider, like, open area than I can remember in a long time. And that's fucking awesome. And also, I got to say this. I'm not a big fan of audio. I've never been a fan of audiobooks. And my joke in the Prey review was that right before I die, I'm going to run over to my fucking Zune and hit record and tell you everything. I fucking hate them. But I hate them. But it is true, though. I mean, it's like, oh, Jesus. I got this hole in my fucking, oh my God. And you're like, okay, thank God we got that. You know, thanks for hitting record.
Yeah, so, he somehow hits stop recording before he dies.
Oh, dude, yeah, like, yeah. Right, I mean, just, come on.
Save, all right.
Yeah, yeah, save file. It's save, fuck.
I'm and crying.
So I despise him normally, but I would say that one of the reasons why I enjoyed BioShock was a little bit, I think, more directed in your face, but it had pretty good audio logs, and I think that this one has good audio logs. I just really don't think they're that useful in many games, but for these in particular, I think one of the reasons why I like them so much is because they do not tell you everything. In fact, they add mystery, and I think that that's the difference that Wildlands failed at. Wildlands would be like, so we're gonna stab this guy in the dick, because there was this chick and dude at the starting of Wildlands who were like rape or like killing people, and the chick was talking about his dick. And And you're just like, okay, I get it. It's right in your face. It's like, here's it. But in Prey and in BioShock, sometimes there was that mystery. And I love that. And that pulls me towards it. Also, on the fact of replayability or backtracking, it's a first game where, again, the weapons can turn against you. But I also love the fact that there were multiple places where you could see through portals only from one direction. Or if you walked into particular areas, only from one direction would you see this thing. And to me, that was like something I hadn't seen before. For example, I stood at the portal and I watched the video.
The looking glass you're referring to, right?
Yeah. But if you go around the other side, you can not only see where he puts the coffee mug,
you're right,
but you can also look and see other things going on in the room. And that, to me, boggled my... It was a lot like Deus Ex, where if you waited, the conversation happened. No one told you it happened. And in Prey, it only did it a couple times. But for example, in the menu... And it's like, do you want to look for this person? And this person, I'm like, there's 200 people here. But every time I click a name, it gives me a quest. And it dawned on me. I'm like, holy shit. It's not that bullshit where it's like, only Johnson matters. All these other fuckers, we don't know where they are. Instead, the game was like, we know where everybody is. Go find that body. And that, to me, it's those little tiny things where I was like, what the fuck? I can go. And I found everybody. I was like, click the dude. Run, go find him. Click the dude. Run, or click the terminal. And I just kept doing it. And
you found everyone?
Yeah, I found everybody. Everybody that was possible to be found. I spent hours.
They were alive, yeah.
Hours. Yeah, And well, you can also find their depending on who they are, you can find their dead body. They don't have to be alive on some of them. And so just clicking through them and going like, okay, I'm going to go find this dude. And that was in one of the hardest areas for me. Speaking of difficulty, there was a robot there and I wasn't that powered up. And he was waiting at that fucking door behind you. So I had to sneak in and look up at the computer and go like, check the lab, find somebody, hit click them, get the quest, and then like sneak out quietly. That shit spoke to me. Like, that's all I can say. Like, it literally was like, that was so cool for me to experience. So I'm glad we have some people who have issues with it, though, because that means Chris and the developers and all that stuff will look at it and go, okay, you know, this ending is this not what it could have been. Let's pick it up on the next
one. You know what it is? And I mean, I know we don't want to ramble too long, but it's whenever a game has choice and that affects, you know, the story and the ending, you're always going to get disagreement.
Yeah, right.
So like, when you game that is more linear and you always have the same ending no matter what you did,
right.
You can either wholeheartedly agree or disagree with that ending. But when it comes to Prey, you're like, well, I like this, but I didn't like this. I could have done that better. It's exactly right. And I think overall, I'm still very happy with my Prey experience and the story was good. It's just that because I played the game a certain way, I didn't get alien neuromods. And then I knew that I could have used those things and enjoyed them to make it easier and just to have a bit of fun with like alien powers. And it wouldn't have affected the story. I would have liked that to have been slightly different. Looking back, you know, with the benefit of hindsight.
Yeah, no, makes total sense. Makes total sense. Here, let me record myself dying. Yeah, I don't know, man. The cool thing is we're going into like the next 2 years, 3 years with Ubisoft saying they're going to go with nonlinear stuff like that. If they turn out to be like Prey, I want to be a happy camper. Like that, I'm hoping more games like this, more games like BioShock start up. Matter of fact, where the fuck is BioShock as a series?
Oh,
have we heard any?
Don't
is there
get
any?
Me started.
No, I mean, is there any rumors on a sequel?
Okay,
because the IP is not owned by Ken, right?
No, the IP is not owned by Ken. So there was this point where Take-Two's president said BioShock is a permanent franchise. All right, cool. They're probably gonna make another game, and then. I think it was several months, closer to a year after that, they had BioShock the Collection. Now we're at a stage where we don't necessarily know which studio within 2K's family has the game, if at all. And when you listen to Take-Two's fiscal report, they said that next year it's going to be Red Dead and a highly anticipated game, which could either be, like, it can't be Mafia, it can't be Civilization. It's either going to be Borderlands or BioShock. Really, that's all we know. And I'm leaning towards it being Borderlands, but maybe they just haven't, like, Take-Two just didn't even refer to it. And I'm thinking it could be a 2019 game, if we're talking about dates, but we don't know anything beyond that.
Imagine if somebody said, hey, Chris, hey, Ken, I'm going to pay you both to work together and do BioShock, the BioShockening. I don't know where you'd fucking put him, but like what world. But
if Chris Avalone were to work on the next BioShock, man, I'd be over the moon.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Fantastic.
I don't think I could handle that. Awesome. That'd be a fun game.
Oh, you could handle it, all right.
Combination of Titans.
You damn well better handle it.
Ken Levine and fucking Chris Avalone. Like, I'm pretty sure you literally hear reports online. Like, today, 40 fucking brains exploded. We're not quite sure why.
Yeah, yeah. And Ken reset the entire game. Chris would probably kill himself. He'd be like, okay, Ken, seriously, I can't rewrite the entire story 76 times. Like, we have to figure out what
finish
we're
doing.
Ken will be all, I don't like this level. Let's just redo it all. You're like, God damn it, Ken. Do you know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see Chris do a horror game, like a Soma, but really dive down into some psychological horror. I think the reason why I like Chris so much, I don't love him as a writer, but I really like him, is because his handle of subtlety. He's got a very good handle of foreshadowing and all those kind of things. Mm. I would love to see him do an Alan Wake style horror game. Alan Wake, I thought, was well done narratively, and I would love to see him die in.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I just replayed that a couple weekends ago, and there's something magical that happens just a little bit into that game, and it's sitting.
It's on the list.
Yeah. That's another game that is so good, but the ending is not for the same reasons as
what?
The ending.
No, don't say it. No, I'm not listening right now. I want to play it. My earbuds aren't even in. Fuck you.
Oh, okay. So no, put them in. So when you finish it, let's talk about this, because I've got to find out what Maddie's saying. That will be so interesting to see why somebody didn't like the ending of that.
It just didn't hit me right. It felt rushed. That's the best way to define it. It wasn't like it was particularly in context or anything bad. It was just like, it felt like it was like, okay, we're done. Like, that's it.
Oh, gotcha. Maybe for that mini sequel, American Nightmare. Maybe
that was
they
a sequel. I never played it, but
I call it a mini sequel, but it was DLC, whatever. No, yeah, it was its full
like
game
an expansion of its own.
I was wondering if maybe they just were like, oh, we're going to actually do some stuff over here. Let's sort of package this up, get it out. It depends, because it's Remedy. You never quite know what they're doing.
No.
So they're a little questionable sometimes, though I love them.
Yeah. That's all we got for the show. Hour 44 minutes. Any final thoughts on Prey?
Great game. To be honest, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if it'll be on my game of the year list, but...
I think it will be for me, without a doubt.
Really? Yeah, for me, I just... I'm setting myself up for comments, man. Because so far my two favorite games of the year are JRPGs.
What are they? I mean,
Nier is number one, hands down. I don't see anything bumping that out. That is fucking. I'm gonna make a huge video on why I think that game is a fucking masterpiece. Because
I can see the comments now. Yeah.
So can I. But it's just that. I have not liked a game that much in fucking since anytime I think about like my favorite games of all time and like when they fucking come out and their release dates and stuff. Like, I haven't liked the game this much since Fallout 3. Like, it's been that long. So for me, I'm really into it. And I didn't want to rush out my opinions on it because I really want to like digest it because I'm feeling like really powerful about how much I like it. And it's not like honeymooning. But, Nier is number one. Number two is Persona 5. And that, I think that also speaks volumes. If anyone pays attention to the show, they know how much I love Persona. And Nier just, yeah, for sure, it was way better.
Fair enough.
Just because, just simply say, it was this fucking beautiful mix of incredible sound, not only in the when you're fighting, where they could have just butchered it when you're fighting machines. Like, that could have just been just scraping and screeching. But also the beautiful vocals, the amazing music. You got the Platinum Games best style of combat where you're switching weapon systems, pod programs, chips, characters in general, character play styles. And then you got this beautiful fucking heartbreaking story that's just I don't even know. I got to find the right words to describe this game. That's where I'm at right now. But yeah, it's just like, my word of the day here is trifecta. It's that trifecta of just everything I love in a game. So that's why I feel so exuberant about it, because it's, you know, oh God, fuck.
It's weird because this is going to be a year where I truly believe a lot of people at the very end, I hope we're not holding people too long, but a lot of people at the very end will have some really different ideas of the game of the year. And it's not only speaks to how good the games are, but also... I think there's not, I won't call it people being lenient, but I think people are starting to sort of back away and look at what a game actually is once it's released versus maybe pre-release hype or versus some thing that was supposed to happen that didn't happen, so we hate the game. People are starting to be a little bit more mature about those kind of things. But the fact that, in all, people are going to hate me, the fact that I could put Injustice minimally within the top 10 is crazy, but within the top 5 is insane. And it is... gameplay-wise, my enjoyment of it, because to me, Game of the Year doesn't mean I think what it does to a lot of people. A lot of people think it means the best mechanically. It's not necessarily that. To me, it's the best overall experience with some other elements. I think Prey is in there, but there's a game I'm playing now that when people see they're just going to be like, I cannot believe he just said what he said. But there's a game that I'm playing that is so shockingly good that it's caused me to step away from it a bit and go like, what exactly is occurring at this time?
That's how I was with Nier. I stepped away from it a good two or three times to make sure, like, okay, am I just like,
yeah, you got to make sure that's like, right. That's right. Exactly, you got to make sure. And usually you're not. Usually for whatever reason, it speaks to you. And that's why some people just like JRPGs, because the American, and that's fine. So these speak to them. But it is nice to hear that we all have those moments where you're like, wait a fuck a minute. Like, why is this reaction so strong? For me, Prey has only grown, for example. Like, I liked Prey when I talked to you guys. I like Prey 10 times more than when I fucking... because I played it so many times. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see this year.
Persona.
Top 10 is going to be fucking crazy. I mean, the big ones will win, but I have a feeling people like us, we're going to have some wildly divergent ideas of what the game of the year is. And and we haven't even got to fucking halfway through the year.
That's insane. I'm looking forward to it, though. It's going to be good.
We'll have a podcast about it, our top 10s or whatever.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Well, like I said, any other things we're tossing out there?
No, I'm done.
We should do a hashtag. I'm going to record myself dying. Yeah. No, what should be? Hashtag dying audio.
Hashtag dying audio. That's great.
Yeah,
hashtag dying audio to see what people say.
Because that... It is funny. I mean, we all have those things in games where, like, how the fuck did this happen?
Yeah. I didn't even realize how stupid it sounds.
Oh, it's hilarious
to record yourself before you die, but it happens. And you know what it is? It's just like, as you die, before you kill me, turn the off button, please.
Yeah. Right. Tell me everything about the bad guy's plans.
actually, Prey did do it. There was this one point. It was like in one of the first rooms you go into. You find this dead body in the ground. You pick it up. He's like, hold on, I think someone's coming. And then it just stops. It's like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, he did. Like, I forgot.
What happens is, before that, it's like this phone call. It's like, why do you call someone and then be like, all right, hey, what's up, man? Like, oh, there's something happening on the space station.
Let me record
this
my
here
Skype.
For whoever stumbles by next. Hold on, someone's coming. To let them know that there's probably a monster around here after they listen to this.
Well, it's like Rhyme. Rhyme has cave paintings. It doesn't tell you anything. But the joke in our podcast this morning was like, who's this really prolific cave painter? Because every game will be like a painting on the wall to sort of hint to you where to go or what to do or the history. It's like, motherfuckers, there isn't even that much graffiti in New York, let alone on this island. Like, but you see that in all these games. Yeah. You see these things. We buy off on. We're like, da-da, it's totally normal. And then later you're like, wait a minute. That makes no sense at all. It's games. It's okay.
All right. Well, that was a great episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you did make it the whole episode, use the hashtag DyingAudio. Tag all our handles on screen. We'd love to hear from you and send you lots of loves and obviously the like button on Twitter. Any closing words from any of the boys?
Not for me.
You don't have to tweet us out at the end. I know someone asked us on Twitter. You don't have to tweet us the ending hashtag. It's just fun to see who reaches the end. That's all.
Yeah. It's not like I have to. We just like to get our fucking egos fueled here.
Did you guys see my tweet to that one person who pretended like it was the end of their world?
Yeah.
And so I was like, you're correct. I'm going to stop doing the podcast because this is such a bad... Jesus.
You went off on him. I was so confused at first. I'm like, what the fuck's wrong?
I was so confused. Yeah.
Oh, were you by me? Sorry.
No. I knew what you like. I read it a second time. I was like, oh, because the first time I was like, you're like, I am not coming on the podcast because this is just such a ridiculous rule. I'm like,
oh,
what's
sorry.
I was like,
wait a minute.
No, it was just like, do we have to? And I was like, you're correct. It is that serious to even ask. But see, I get really petulant about like if somebody asks that, I'm like, motherfucker, there are far more important things. Like, that should never have been asked. Like, never. If you're an adult, if you're not wearing big boy pants, then maybe. But, yeah. Sorry, that's just my rant.
Oh, you're fine. Anyway, we hope you guys enjoyed, and we will catch you in next week's episode. Peace out.
Peace out.
Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.